TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take it with triple chops.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air, like the expert that he is. Coming up on this afternoon's program in about 30 minutes' time, he's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack Edwards is going to join us to preview tomorrow evening's Jets-Bruins game. At about 1:30 this afternoon, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News is going to join us. The Jets play the Sabres coming up Tuesday evening, so we'll talk to Mike about how the Sabres have been doing so far this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. Spending the bulk of the first 2 hours of today's program focused completely on your Winnipeg Jets. And let's start with last night's Jets-Penguins matchup at MTS Center. The Jets were defeated by a 3-1 margin. But as we said on our post-game podcast last night, Richard, the score was sort of flattering to the Penguins, as this was the best game the Jets have played on home ice, probably since the first Penguins game a number of weeks ago.
Yeah, Drew, I thought they played a pretty hard game. You know, they obviously had a difficulty finding the score sheet, but I thought the overall effort level was far exceeded their past few games. And I think it's important to point that out, Drew, because the past couple, you know, last week's show and obviously our Wednesday shows, we pointed out the fans will support a team that tries hard and loses against superior competition. Which the Penguins clearly are. Exactly right. But the crowd has, and the fans have absolutely no room at all for a team that's just likely not giving it 100%. And I think over the past couple games against inferior, you could argue, competition, the likes of Florida, Toronto, and even Ottawa with their injuries, the Jets hadn't performed at the level they did last night. So, you know, looking back at it, had they performed, Ezzy, at the same level as they did yesterday, with that effort level over their past, you know, 5, 6, 7 games, they probably wouldn't be in the position that they are right now.
And Richie, this is an effort that they needed after the Philly game, even after the Ottawa game, which they won, but they didn't put in the best effort. You know, you've got a game against Boston coming up, which is a very important game, and you've played Boston well last year, and you got a point in Boston earlier this season, but you're going on the road for 5 games, and 8 of 9 after the Boston game are on the road. You've got a lot of away games coming up. They needed this effort, and I thought it was really telling when the Jets fans gave the team a standing ovation after a couple of sequences in the second period where they absolutely dominated the play. You know, Eric Tangrady came in, and I thought he gave a pretty good effort, even though he didn't show up on the score sheet, but he was making plays, hitting. And, you know, the Jets are not going to beat a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins by outscoring them. And we saw it last year. And when I say that, I mean, if you're going to go run and gun against the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's going to happen like last year when they I think the Penguins averaged 7 goals in those last couple of games against the Jets last year. So there are deficits to take from this game. They didn't get 2 points, but Brian Little had a fantastic game. Andrew Ladd continues to play really well, got another goal late. There are positives to take. We saw a couple fights, Thorbs and Wright got into a fight. There was life to this team. And for the last couple of weeks, there hasn't been a lot of life to this team. And I think, you know, a couple of moves, the return of Bogo, I really think that changed the kind of the attitude in the dressing room. And you could see there was a lot more jump to their step, and they seemed like they cared a lot more. So I think this is going to be very good going into the Boston game.
You can argue, though, in professional sports, that there are not a lot of moral victories. And Drew, I think when you're talking about production, this needs to be pointed out. The Winnipeg Jets have not scored more than 3 goals in 8 consecutive games.
Yeah.
And you can spin that whichever way you want to. But with the way that they play defense, and obviously I thought they played defensively pretty well yesterday, but overall, the way this team plays defense, and it's not, they don't play defense very well, you have to score. You have to find ways to score. And so the lines have been juggled to an extent. But you can't rest on your laurels. I mean, you can't, because you think you should have won a game or you played better yesterday, you still haven't scored. Have you created some opportunities to score? Sure, you have. But have you created enough? And that's why I think the line combinations, as they are currently constructed, I think there needs to be a change.
And we're going to discuss the line combinations and the roster shuffling that occurred for the Jets this week. We're going to discuss that next segment. But you look at last night's game. You know, what struck me as really being an advantage for the Jets last night against Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh's a better team, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree or take issue with that statement, is that the speed the Jets were able to create through the neutral zone as a result of their back-end rushing. Bogosian with the puck is a beautiful thing to watch.
Yep.
Redmond had some nice rushes through the neutral zone because he's been pretty adept at creating some speed through there. Obviously, Byfuglien is a thrill to watch anytime he's charging down the ice. They lost Enstrom very early in the game. He wasn't at practice today for the Jets. The team is awaiting an MRI. I think we all saw that when he left the ice yesterday. We won't be expecting Toby Enstrom in the lineup tomorrow. This team created there had more life and more jump to their step, especially as it came in terms of the neutral zone, where the last 2 weeks, it had been a lot of stand around in the neutral zone, watch the other guy with the puck, and maybe something happens, but more often than not, it ends up going back against your team the other way.
I think one of the keys, Drew, to that point, one of the keys to last night's game was that the Jets didn't stand still.
Right.
So when they had the puck in their own zone for those organized breakouts, what they didn't do was wait for everybody to get set. They just went, and they went quickly. And what you do there is you don't allow the Pittsburgh Penguins to set up their counter, how they counter the breakdowns, and they have a system that they enforce. So what you do is you have a little bit of the Penguins scattered all around. You can gain the red line quicker, put the puck in deeper, gain the opposing blue line. So to that point, I agree with you there. And the Jets have to really take advantage of that because they do have a really strong puck-moving back end. You know, you say what you want to about maybe Dustin Byfuglien's defensive game. Offensively, he's second to none, arguably, second to Erik Karlsson. But that's it. As far as I'm concerned, Bogosian really has great speed. He can make a nice first pass. Obviously, Enstrom went healthy. Even Hainsey. And you say what you will about Ron Hainsey. The guy can move the puck. And Redmond, so that point's well taken. But that's a portion of the game. And they need to be able to capitalize when they get into that offensive zone.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct about that. But I thought the Jets did create more offensive chances last night than they had in the last number of weeks. They ran into a very good goaltender in Marc-Andre Fleury, who I thought played a tremendous game. He was the first star last night, and deservingly so, because he was the best Pittsburgh Penguins player on the ice.
98% of the time, Marc-Andre Fleury is amazing. I'm a big Marc-Andre Fleury fan, and I know that last year in the playoffs, he didn't play well, but, you know, that happens to goalies, and he would tell you that he wasn't happy with his performance. But absolutely, Marc-Andre Fleury was the first star of that game. But back to creating offense, again, that goes back to what Richie was saying about a moral victory. I mean, they only scored one goal, and it was late, but it's a good sign. Wheeler, I thought, really looked better than he's looked in a few weeks, creating offense off of the wing, taking the puck wide, working really well. That line really, is working. I mean, it's clear that Andrew Ladd, he already has 7 goals this year. He's leading the team. Olli Jokinen, Evander Kane, Bermi, these guys are counted on for offense.
But they're not producing offensively.
They're not producing, and they did play well yesterday, though. Kane, even though he didn't score, I thought, he was throwing body checks. He was engaged. But, again, at the end of the day, you got to get goals. He's a 30-goal scorer, and he's being paid the big bucks to score, and he knows that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had a big game tomorrow against Boston, because I think he's coming close to putting the puck in the net.
Well, Richie, you said it outset of this show. Friday, February 1st, the Jets lose 8-3 to Tampa Bay. Tuesday, February the 5th, they beat Florida 3-2. Then 2 days later, they lose to Toronto 3-2. They beat Ottawa 1-0. They lose to Philly 3-2. They beat Pittsburgh 3-1. Well, you haven't scored more than three goals here, and you're asking a lot to expect to win very many games. You know, in the month of January, the offense really wasn't the problem by any stretch of the imagination. The offense was going. It has really dried up since February, since the start of this month, and we're, you know, 20 days through the month or so at this point in time, 16 days rather. You know, when is the offense going to get back in a groove?
It's just, you know, it's a million-dollar question, Drew, and I don't know, I certainly don't have the answer for it. I think the key, though, is you look at this squad. You know, Evander Kane has 10 points in 13 games, but he's only got three goals. He's got to be better. Olli Jokinen, 4 points in 13 games. He has to be better. Those are the two keys to me. I mean, people differ with me in terms of the expectations they have for Alexander Burmistrov. I don't have the same offensive expectations as maybe some others do. Jokinen and Kane are the keys. Those are the horses. Those are the guys you need to get going. And Kane has 10 points in 13 games, but he only has three goals. He needs to score. Jokinen needs to be able to create offense. And it might not be directly, you know, he's not a great passer, but it might be by going to the net, by creating chances that way.
And I thought Olli Jokinen played one of his better games in the last couple weeks yesterday. Obviously, they shuffled the lines up, and he was playing with Tane Grady and with Kyle Wellwood. And I thought that line did have a little bit of, had some glimpses of, you know, good forechecking and good opportunities. But, you know, it is a results-oriented business, push comes to shove. And the results just aren't there as of yet, especially on the score sheet.
Well, I know we're going to talk about this later, too, but, Richie, obviously, Tane Grady comes into the lineup for his first game as a Winnipeg Jet, so they try to put him with Jokinen, a guy that can create some room for him and a more skilled player. But, you know, it looks like Claude Noel likes the Ladd-Little Wheeler line, and he's kept that together a lot this year, and they are producing. But then, you know, you've got a situation where Antro isn't really going right now. He's not having a good year. You're playing him with Kane, who he's struggling to score goals. They're still not finding the right mix of players to get the most production out of their best players. And Richie's right. Olli Jokinen was brought here to give them size up the middle, sure. He was here to bring leadership, and he's done that. Olli Jokinen's been in the league for a long time. He's put up a lot of points. But he's also the type of guy, he has to put the puck in the net.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's being paid to put the puck in the net.
He's
not being paid just for those other intangibles.
No, I mean, the leadership is a nice feature and everything else, but, you know, if you had told the Jets management that Olli Jokinen through 13 games has provided you with two goals and two assists, and no matter how much leadership he's giving that dressing room, they would not be happy with that output, especially at $4.5 million a year.
I'd agree with that. And, you know, Richie talks about the fact that the Jets haven't gotten more than three goals, and in a way, I like that a little bit, that we're not having the run-and-gun 9-8 games against the Philadelphia Flyers. But you also want to know that someone's got the hot hand. And right now, aside from Andrew Ladd, there aren't too many guys that have the hot hand in the dressing room.
I agreed wholeheartedly. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss some of the line shuffling, the roster juggling, a new face on the ice at the MTS Iceplex for Jets practice.
Is that Dave Minuk?
It's not Dave Minuk, but we'll tell you who it is after these commercial messages. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, and this is his final night in town, Matt Fulcheron is in town, so you can get tickets at 488-4520. And, of course, coming up at the end of this month, Rob Schneider is going to be at Rumors. Two additional shows have been added, so there's now two shows on Wednesday, although the 7:45 show on Wednesday is now sold out, so there's one show left that still have tickets available for it. That's the Wednesday Late Show. So contact Rumors at 488-4520. You can also go on their website at rumorscomedyclub.com, and you can get your tickets to see Rob Schneider. Initially, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday sold out, then Sunday sold out, and then the Late Show Thursday sold out, and now two more shows for Wednesday, and the early show's already sold out. So you know that Rob Schneider tickets are going fast. So get in touch with them, 488-4520. Gentlemen, the Jets made a number of different roster moves this
week. Obviously, there was the Alexei Ponikarovsky trade to New Jersey that happened on Wednesday.
Yep.
At the same time on Wednesday, or a little bit earlier in the day, they acquired Eric Tangrady from the Pittsburgh Penguins in exchange for a seventh-round draft pick. And there's a new addition back on the ice at Jets practice at the Iceplex today. That's Antti Miettinen was skating with the Winnipeg Jets in a... You know, it looked like he was cleared to be practicing with them. There was no special jersey on. It wasn't like a no-contact situation. So Antti Miettinen is obviously getting closer and closer to returning to the lineup. Richard, you know, you get to play doctor right now. You get to play the mixologist. How do you want to see the Winnipeg Jets lines, you know, for tomorrow, Sunday against Boston, and then in the coming week?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew. If Miettinen's back, I think he'll probably slide in. I don't think the team likes the way Well was been playing, and I think they could use the increased speed and, I guess, size. You can't really get any smaller than Kyle Wellwood. So I would throw Miettinen in there, and I don't think Wellwood necessarily played very well. So probably take him out of there if you want to keep intact that fourth line to be more of a physical line. But the first line is produced offensively. I think Brian Little's actually been the best of the bunch. Him and Ladd have been the best of the bunch. Wheeler's shown a little bit of improvement, but I think the key to this team's season, though, is getting their other guys going. And so I think you need to break up the first line to be able to create offense on the other lines.
Okay, so even though Ladd, Little, and Wheeler have been going as of late,
yeah,
how do you want to see that broken up? Obviously, Ladd's going to be on the left wing, and Kane's going to be on the left wing, separate left wings. Do you want Wheeler with Kane? Do you want Little with Kane? How do you want to break up that first line in order to get the rest of the team going?
Well, what I would do is I think you need to get Kane going. And I think to get Kane going, I think you'd put him with Little and Wheeler because they played together last year, because they have a great element of speed that I don't think other teams can counteract. I really don't. When you get those three going at full speed, very difficult to contain. And Wheeler's the passer and Kane's the shooter, and Little can do a bit of both. That's what I would line up as line one, you know, if you want to title the lines, line one. I would put Miettinen with Jokinen because they're both Finnish. I think there's a comfort level there, and I would throw Tangrady on the other side of them, add some size, help with the forecheck because Jokinen's a bigger guy. So that's what I would do for line two or three, however you want to.
So Tangrady on the left, yeah. Jokinen in the center, and Miettinen.
Yeah.
We expect that he's going to be returning sometime this week,
right,
based on what we were hearing down at practice at the Iceplex, would be on the right side.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I put Ladd on the left side with Bremistrov in the middle and Antropov on the right side. Is that ideal? No. I think you're rolling your top three offensive lines and then Ladd logs in on top power play unit. So I don't think that's not a demotion for Ladd. I think you're really still rolling three to four lines all the time. But, Ladd can do some things. He can go to the net. He's obviously got good hands. And Andropov does have some vision, obviously. And Bremistrov, it's good puck possession. So that line I'm not the most confident in, but I like to see what they could do and, more importantly, see if you can get the other lines going, because I think what the other guys bring. You know what Ladd can bring into the table here. But you have to be able to get production. You have to be able to get production from Jokinen and Kane, and if maybe this gets them going. I don't know. The fourth line, you can certainly argue that you take out a guy like James Wright, who doesn't seem to bring too much to the table. I like Jimmy Slater. I think he played hard. I think he played really well last night in that 5-on-3. And just he consistently plays hard. And Thorburn, you know what you're getting. So you could certainly pop out Wright and put in a guy like Wellwood, or you can fiddle around with what you want to do there. But those top...
Or even put in Peluso on that line.
Yeah, I mean, you feel bad for that kid, with Wade Ronaldo didn't fight him, and then the iffy penalty call. But
yeah,
Thorburn's going to bring you more to the table than Peluso is, and Thorburn can fight. So those are the lines as I'd construct them, Drew. And then obviously the question is, what do you do at the back end? Because it appears Zennstrom may very well be out for 4 to 6 weeks. That's what I would estimate, just based on how he left with his shoulder. Now, I'm not a doctor. And we'll wait and see what the actual report is. But it's not going to be day to day as Claude Noel said.
Not the way he left the ice.
And Dustin Byfuglien said this morning, in an ideal world, he'd play with Zach Bogosian. I don't think there's any way that's going to happen. I would anticipate that the combinations be, Bogosian, maybe they'll revert back to Bogosian and Stewart, Byfuglien and maybe Hainsey, and then they may throw Klitsam with Redmond. The question is, can you throw one of those right-side defensemen on the left side, especially younger defensemen like Redmond or Postma? Do you want them playing the wrong side of the ice? and adjusting to the NHL game. That's a very big task, at least with Klitsam. He's played that side before. He's a left-handed shooting guy, and you get a little bit more comfort, I think, there.
Richie, it's interesting. You know, you go over the lines, and yesterday, even though the Jets put in a good effort and created offense and outshot the Penguins in the second and third periods, you know, Kane and Jokinen is not working. And Kane is a unique player because Kane likes to dump and chase for himself. And by that, I mean he likes to go around guys. He likes to out...
He likes to use his speed down the left wing.
Absolutely. And I like what you're thinking there because, you know, Pierre LeBrun wrote about this. If you look at the good teams in the NHL, the teams, even though San Jose is not doing as well as they were, but if you look at St. Louis, you look at San Jose, you look at Chicago, even Detroit, they roll out four lines and they average 12 to 15 minutes each. And I haven't liked how the Claude Noel hasn't done that. And he isn't playing his third and fourth line as much as I'd like. And I think even though he would say himself he doesn't need to call it a number one line, I think maybe we have to get off of that Ladd Little Wheeler or necessarily have to be on even the top two lines. And that's why you can move Ladd down to the third line. He can still play first power play, like you said. And he's still getting close to as much ice time as guys in the top six. And they need to find the right mix because you can't change your lines from day to day and expect consistency.
To a point, I agree. As just have a note, Drew, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com just sent me a note that Claude Noel said he's going to be playing Hainsey with Bufflin. So
okay,
that will be the pairing.
And when Buff was out, Hainsey was playing with Enstrom. Makes sense. When Buff and Enstrom go out, Hainsey becomes the top pairing defenseman. And you know what? He's
played well this
year.
He's
played well, and sure, you know, Hainsey's not scoring, but you know he's a big guy and he's mobile and he can play that shutdown role. And I think, you know, we didn't talk about it a lot the first segment, but without Enstrom, I thought the Jets did a pretty darn good job of playing the Pittsburgh Penguins. You got guys like Malkin, Crosby, and Kunitz flying around out there. I thought the Jets played a pretty tight game. So, you know, we'll look, that's going to be one of the keys against a line like Bergeron, Marchand, and Sagan on Sunday.
Yeah,
shutting those guys down.
Absolutely right. You know, you have Kyle Wellwood sort of coming out of the lineup if Antti Miettinen's healthy, and he's going to be on the road trip with the Jets when they go on the road starting Tuesday in Buffalo. Do you have Wellwood coming out of the lineup, or is still his offensive, you know, for all of his shortcomings, and there's plenty, is his offensive creativity still too good to take out of the lineup altogether?
Not really, Drew. I think it'll depend on kind of what they want to do with James Wright.
Can Kyle Wellwood play the left side?
Yeah, I mean, he played it last year a bit, if I recall, and, you know, and you're playing minimal minutes, really.
Right.
And then maybe some power play time. It's not a huge adjustment. It's not as big of an adjustment to play the wing and to switch sides on forward than it is to play on defense. Whole different story there, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think that's a substantial decision that needs to be made, because if it isn't, it's a reflection of the Jets' talent more than anything else.
So you know, that'll be something to watch for, but, you know, it is time for the Jets lineup to get shuffled. And, I mean, we saw they made some, you know, this Ponikarovsky trade is a very minor blip, but is it a shot across the bow?
No, I don't think it is. I think, really, what the Jets are essentially buying a fourth-round pick.
They're buying a fourth-round pick, Richie, and what they're saying is, we're going to go out and acquire Tangrady. We're going to give him a chance. They said this.
Yeah.
We're going to give him a chance. He played with Jokinen and Wellwood last night.
He's certainly a big body.
He's a big body, and you know what? He's going to get a shot to make this team. If he doesn't make the team, then he won't play. He might be a scratch if he doesn't produce.
And he very well may be, but they're going to give him a shot and see he's younger, so he can see what he can do. That's why I like the idea of putting Miettinen on that line, giving Jokinen a little bit of comfort there, and you add speed and size. And I think that's important to what that line does, because if you look at the Tangrady line, Tangrady-Jokinen, the hypothetical Tangrady-Jokinen-Miettinen line, well, Miettinen complements those two better than Wellwood because he's bigger. And he's not huge by any means, but he's bigger. And because those guys, Tangrady and Jokinen, are bigger guys who need to throw around their body. And both at time, you could say for their portions of their career, obviously Tangrady's being shorter than Jokinen's, but both have been criticized for not using their big bodies as much as some think they should.
Well, and, you know, if you look at the Jets, up and down the Jets roster, they're certainly not small anymore. They were small last year, but they're not small, but they got a bunch of big guys that may not play very physically. And I think that's something that, you know,
well, the question
I don't think it's going to change at this point, given the at the stage where all those people are at their career.
The question also is, you know, speed.
Right.
And where is it coming from?
And on that first line, speed's not going to be an issue. The first line that we're talking, you know, like the hypothetical first line with Kane, Little, and Wheeler. They got speed to kill in that line. But as you go further down, they do become a little bit more plodding than that first line. Something you're going to have to watch out for, just depending on how they get the lines get put together. Let's go to break. When we come back, Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to push Jack Edwards back about 30 minutes time, so he'll join us at the top of the hour.
Why would you push Jack Edwards?
Not literally. Jack's a pretty sturdy guy. I don't think I have to push him at all. Anyways, he's just needed a little couple extra minutes as they're flying into Winnipeg from Buffalo, where the Bruins played last night. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information on becoming a CGA, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, tomorrow evening, 5 p.m., puck drop here on TSN 1290. The Jets and the Bruins will come together and come into action for the first time on MTS Center ice so far this year. This is a team the Jets have had some success against, you know, especially on home ice. They won both their meetings on home ice last year.
Three of four last year.
That's right. They also won one in Boston.
Yep.
You know, and they played them early this year, and they lost in a shootout. So, again, that success so far continued a little bit this year. You know, what did the Jets have to do? You know, this the Jets, if you look at them on paper, the Jets are probably at a disadvantage in all areas against the Boston Bruins. So what's the one area of weakness the Jets might be able to exploit to give themselves an advantage over the Bruins ahead of tomorrow night's game?
I don't know if there are any weaknesses, but if they can exploit anything, it would have to be not exploiting, but if anything, using speed and rolling lines. The Jets, you know, they're coming off of a good effort. They've lost a couple home games here. They're going out on the road, but in that game against Boston, they traded chances with the Bruins. And if you remember that game, it was on Martin Luther King Day. And if you remember that game, the Bruins hit a couple posts. And the Jets, you could argue, were pretty lucky to get a point, even though they were there the whole game. But, you know, the Jets are going to have to take care of their own zone. And the Boston Bruins are, you know, everyone talks about their skill. And actually got what they like to do is actually go Lucic, Krejci, and Horton right now. But I got that wrong. But, Richie, they're a physical team. Char is out there for half the game. They like to hit. Marchand is a very difficult player to play against. They're going to have to be smart, and they're going to have to be physical, and they're going to have to continue their effort from last night into tomorrow.
Yeah, Drew, you pick at some of the weaknesses of the Boston Bruins, and maybe in the past you could have said, you know, the Bruins on the back end are a little bit slow of foot, and I'm not so sure you can say that anymore. Seidenberg can skate. Dougie Hamilton's a good skater. Chara can be everywhere, and I think Johnny Boychuk's really improved his skating over time. Ferentz and McQuaid, those guys can get the job done, so I'm not so sure you can really exploit that anymore. I think the key to the game tomorrow is going to be exactly what was the problem against Philadelphia, and I don't remember which Jet said it. It might have been Hainsey. We had a lot of trouble, he said, handling the Flyers below the hash marks, you know, along the boards and in the lower portion of their
Philly's
own zone.
Philly's a big team, too. Yeah.
And Boston's a big team. Now, you get the switch. You get to take out Enstrom. I mean, unfortunately, but you take him out and you put him in Bogosian. So certainly you're able to handle the boards better with Bogosian than you are Enstrom. But even so, does one guy make the difference? So that's going to be the key to me, is can the Jets handle Boston or prevent Boston from cycling the puck, getting it down low, and working over the Jets. That's the key to me.
I thought the Jets did a, you know, going back, looking at last night's game against Pittsburgh,
yep.
I thought the Jets did a pretty good job in neutralizing, you know, Crosby and Malkin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, relatively speaking, they each only had one assist, and that came on the 5-on-3 goal.
Yep.
So I thought the Jets did a pretty decent job at neutralizing them. Now, Pittsburgh is certainly, they're certainly a deep team, but they are very top-heavy with Crosby and Malkin. And then there is a little bit of a drop-off, whereas Boston can really throw four lines at you. Does that play more into the Jets' hands, or is that more, you know, an advantage for Boston in that they're constantly able to throw talent at you each and every line?
I think it's an advantage for Boston. You look at last night, they lost to Buffalo, but Rich Peverly scored. And Dougie Hamilton got his first goal, so they weren't necessarily getting their goals, but from their top players, Bergeron and Krejci. But last year they were one of the top teams in the East, Richie, and they didn't have a 90-point guy. They have almost four first lines. But, you know, the Jets, to their credit, have gotten up when they've played the Boston Bruins, and they've brought their A-game. And when you talk about A-game, it's cliche, and Claude Noel talks about it all the time. But yesterday was, for the most part, an A-game for the Jets, even though they didn't win. When you consider that they're playing Pittsburgh, who's still one of the top teams in the NHL, and I would say they're still up there as one of the top four teams as far as a Stanley Cup contender, you know, They've managed to play well. They've gotten good performances. They've played tight defensively for the most part. They've stayed out of the penalty box. They've played a smart game. They haven't reverted to that undisciplined, freewheeling hockey that seems to get them in trouble. But I think you're really going to have to play a flawless game, and that's what the Jets do. Not flawless in the sense that, you know, every shot has to go in and everything like that. They just have to play. They have to play their roles. And in the past, what's going, you know, well for them is that they've played a very good team game when they've played the Bruins. And, you know, if Evander Kane is able to put some shots in that didn't go in against Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, I think they have a really good shot tomorrow.
Now, obviously, they have to match the energy level that they did. You look at the Bruins, and the Bruins have the best penalty kill in the NHL so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Jets' power play has been nothing to write home about the last, you know, 3 weeks or so. The Bruins have the worst penalty power play in the league, mm-hmm. which is sort of astounding when you look at all their offensive talent.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you can say that the one weakness of the team is their power play, yet it hasn't affected them because they're so good 5-on-5, that doesn't really bode well for success for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, that's exactly right, Drew. I mean, so because they don't have a good power play doesn't mean you're going to want to take more penalties.
Right, because eventually you would figure they're not going to end the year down at the bottom of the standings or the rankings when it comes to the team's power play. You just look at them, and they are I'd have to double check, but I think that all of us had them at least probably going to the Eastern Conference Final this year, given you look at their talent and everything else, and there's no real weaknesses that jump out at you about the Boston Bruins. Now, you know, maybe the Jets will get lucky, and it won't be Tuukka Rask in net, and it'll be Anton Khudobin.
Mm-hmm.
Played last night, yeah.
Khudobin played last night?
Yep.
So you would expect that it's probably going to be Rask then. It would be one or the other. So, I mean, you know, not that, you know, Khudobin's played well, but he's not Tuukka Rask.
Right.
But, you know, you really look at it, and it's just strictly going to be a matter of the Jets are going to have to come out and they're going to have their probably one of their best efforts of the year so far. They're going to have to build on the Pittsburgh effort and even amplify it to another degree. Because, I mean, you know, let's go around this. Let me ask this question. Who's better, Pittsburgh or Boston right now?
How many segments do we have to discuss that?
Well, I mean, you know, we can take as long as we want. I mean, the beauty of,
I think that if they played in a series, the Penguins' defense, as currently constructed, cannot handle Boston in a seven-game series. I think the offenses are pretty similar.
They have
a slight edge to Pittsburgh just because of the overwhelming talent they have in Crosby and Malkin. But Boston's defense is better than Pittsburgh's defense, in my opinion, and is better equipped to handle Pittsburgh's offense than Boston would be. Sorry, they're better. Well, they're than Pittsburgh would be to handle Boston's offense. The goalies, I think, are both very good. I like Fleury a little better, but it's just Pittsburgh's defense. And if you look at their defense quickly, guys, on the side, you look at their defense last night. You got Matt Niskanen. First of all, you got Letang playing a fair amount on the left side. But you have Matt Niskanen in the top four, and he's not a guy you can handle any of the Bruins on the boards at all. And then you look at their third pairing. Derek Engelin will drop the gloves a bit, so you'll lose him for periods of time. He's not a great skater. He's not that great offensively. And then you got Simon Dupree, who has talent, but once he loses that puck or makes a mistake, it's like a fire drill out there. He completely loses composure. So I don't. If I'm a Pittsburgh fan, I am absolutely adamant about the team adding a top four defender before the playoffs.
Yeah, and Dupree's a rookie, obviously, and I really like Dupree. I think he's going to be good. But he's still not, you can't put him in your top four, and they're not playing him. I think he only had 11 or 12 minutes last night. He's not playing, he can't play that role. I agree with you. But now that I think about it, I don't know, remember the last time Pittsburgh and Boston played in the playoffs, because I don't know, it might have been a few years back. But these two teams are similar in the sense that they're very deep. But I would agree with Richie in that sense. They're going to face a sustained attack. Boston, again, just like the first game of the season in Boston, you're going to face a team that has tons of speed, lots of size. They're aggressive on the forecheck. And what the Jets did very well last night was they contained guys like Crosby and Malkin as much as they could. You mentioned they set up nicely on the power play, and Crosby and Malkin were able to generate some offense, but not that much.
Well, it seems like the Jets sort of had a strategy last night, and it's easier said to do this than it is if we're going to lose, it's not going to be Crosby and Malkin who beat us.
Yeah, Drew, maybe, but I wanted to get it, move it. And that's true, but that's every team needs to be able to try and do that. I think when you look at Boston's team and you look at Pittsburgh's team, one thing I notice more than anything else is that the players on the team know their role.
Yep.
And obviously that comes with talent and establishing top two lines. But you look at the Jets, you know, who's the second line? Who's the third line? What's the role? Whereas you look at Boston, you say, okay, you know, the Bergeron, Sagan, Marchand line is one of the top two lines. Krejci, Lucic, and Horton, those are the top two lines. The next line, you know, Chris Kelly, Peverly, Bork, those guys know. We're the third line. We have a job to do. And then Paille, Campbell, and Thornton, we're the fourth line. We have a job to do. And here you don't see that. And Pittsburgh, the same thing. Brandon Sutter knows, I'm the third line center. He's playing really well defensively. I have a job to do. And then the fourth line, who scored last night, well, actually twice with the empty netter.
Greg Adams.
You know, they have a job to do. And I don't think the Jets have the good teams have those slots.
Defined roles.
And the Jets don't. And so that's why when we're talking about the lines, you know, you call the second line what you will, the third line what you will, but there's no defined roles. And that's how far, to me, the Jets are from still being a contender.
Right, and it's still early, but now we can't say that anymore. I mean, you're 13 games into the season. You have to have more defined roles. And it's fine, Noel is still mixing and matching his lines, and, you know, he's had varying degrees of success. But you can't, again, it goes back to my point, you can't keep bumping a guy from the first line to the third line to the fourth line to the second line.
But they're doing that because they don't have any continuity, right? And they haven't had any success, so you can't keep trotting out the same lines if they're not performing.
What I want to talk about, Drew, and I know we have something planned for next segment. Can we get into the culture issue next segment, though?
Let's go to break and come back, and we'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets culture. There's been a lot of talk about that so far this week. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Regardless of your talent level, if you suffer pulls, tears, strains, or spasms, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is your destination to get you back to health. Whether it's physiotherapy or massage therapy, the three convenient locations throughout Winnipeg means that there's always an Elite Sports Injury Clinic nearby to help you get back onto the playing field. Located in St. Vitale at 160 Meadowood Drive in downtown Winnipeg at 394 Graham Avenue, or their new location at the rink located at 91 Lawson Crescent, Elite Sports Injury Clinic is always available to help you get back into health. Give them a call or visit their website at physiowinnipeg.com. Once again, the Elite Sports Injury Clinic. Check them out, physiowinnipeg.com. Richie, you wanted to talk about the culture of the Winnipeg Jets. And this has been sort of talked about for about, I mean, it was talked about when the team first came back that they needed to change the culture from Atlanta. And it was talked about again this week after what has been a very lackadaisical, and I'll be polite in saying that word, 2 weeks for this team where their best effort has been in that loss to Pittsburgh last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long does it take to change a culture? And if you bring the same players, more or less the same players from Atlanta, how do you get those same players to buy into a new culture?
I have an issue with the culture comment. I mean, let's go through the roster here one by one.
Okay.
Vlad.
Yeah.
Brought in from Chicago, Carolina, won two cups. I'd say that people don't really consider him to be part of the culture issue.
No, I think he would be a...
Okay.
Yeah.
Wheeler.
Yeah.
Brought in from Boston, a team that was won, competitive. Halfway, near the end of the trade deadline, right near the trade deadline of the year, you know, before Atlanta left to come to Winnipeg.
The year that Boston ended up winning the Cup.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and then you have Little. So Little was in Atlanta. So really there's one player who's in Atlanta for a prolonged period of time.
On that line.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Then you go to the next line. So Kane was drafted by the squad. Okay, I mean, you can argue whether or not he's a problem or not. He's been very
productive. But he only played a couple of years in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, him and Ladd, all of them really have only played a couple of years in Atlanta. Yeah. You move over. You want to just go by what the lines have been for the most part. Jokinen, they just signed this offseason, okay? Tangrady, they brought in 3 days ago.
Wellwood, free agent.
They signed
Nietinen, waiver acquisition.
Waiver. Yeah. Wellwood, they brought in on their own. Ponikarovsky, before dealt, was brought in after the Atlanta experiment. James Wright brought in after the Atlanta experiment.
So are you pretty much saying that the culture argument is a crutch and it's a BS argument?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well,
Stewart,
can I get in here too? Stewart was on Boston, came over with Wheeler, but if you look at the two guys that have been the Thrashers the longest, Slater and Thorburn, and again,
mm-hmm.
before anybody gets too excited and starts tweeting at us, if anybody's listened to the show or knows me, I'm the biggest Slater and Thorburn fans there are out there. So I'm not saying that it's them. I'm saying that it's clearly not them.
That's right.
And those are two of the most positive guys in the dressing room and that will break their backs for their teammates on the ice and that are role models for the team and their teammates. So I agree with Richie. I think, and again, changing the culture, you know, if you ask the guys in the dressing room, you ask the coach, it's not changing the culture. They're trying to build a culture in Winnipeg. I mean, they're trying to build a positive culture. They want, you don't think that the Jets want to be known as a hardworking team? Of course they do. And if there are individuals who are struggling with buying into the team concept, that's a completely different thing. Individuals who aren't, you know, busting their balls for the team, that's different than a group culture.
So where does this culture discussion come from then?
Well, you have a new coach, you have a new general manager, you have new ownership. I mean, how many pieces Bufflin's brought over from Chicago after they won the Cup? I mean, you're really looking at what? Bogosian, kind of Hainsey, Little, Burmistrov, and Kane? I mean, was that really what the culture argument is? Because that's what the facts point to. I mean, that's just my point from afar.
Right.
But nobody would point to those players as being problems on this team or being, you know, especially soft, I don't think.
So then the question is, what does that culture argument even mean?
Well, it sounds like the way we've sort of parsed it there is that it's an argument that it's a straw man argument.
Maybe Enstrom too would be in there. But yeah, I agree. I think it is a straw man argument. I think it is an excuse, just like injuries are an excuse.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing if the culture remains that you get drafted in the first round and you're immediately with the team. Fine, that's changing. That's not culture that you're changing. That's changing a method in which you go about your business.
It is culture in a sense because it's making you earn it and in a culture that, you know, is rewarding.
Fine, rewarding good play,
right.
But okay, which is fine. I mean, I'll accept that argument. But I mean, then how much longer does it? You know, if there's something to be said for the culture argument, and I agree with you that I don't really think that there is. How long until we can stop talking about, you know, about that as being something that the Jets are working through? I mean, you have Stanley Cup winners on this team. They may not have been the biggest contributors to their teams.
No, they were still.
But they were sizable contributors.
They were definitely contributors.
You know, they weren't guys bouncing back and forth between the press box. They were regulars on Stanley Cup winning teams.
That's right.
If those guys don't know how to change the culture or positively impact the culture, maybe there is no culture that really that has taken root. Or maybe if there is a culture, it's a culture that's developed in Winnipeg where the team is soft.
Yeah, well, you know what? When you have that many roster changes, I mean, I just don't think you can point to the culture of Atlanta. I just think that's an excuse. I think bad teams use excuses, good teams don't. Simple as that.
Yeah, and again, when you talk about the culture of a team, it's still so early. I mean, yes, I'm not making excuses for why the culture might not of the dressing room of the team might not be what they want. But you know, the Jets organization, going back to the Moose days, the culture of that organization, True North, is very, very well respected. So you know that that is fine. Now, if there are issues in the dressing room or players having issues with other issues that they won't talk about, you know, on the record, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a problem with the culture. Because if you look at the Jets, and they fight for each other, they stand up for each other. They'll drop the gloves, they'll lay a hit, whatever. I mean, that to me, that's not a question. I don't think you see necessarily divides in the dressing room like you have maybe with, remember, with the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't think you have that necessarily of an issue, but it shouldn't be any reason why the Jets aren't winning more. That is, like Richie said, an excuse that's unacceptable.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you're trying to change culture, then you don't sign Alexei Ponikarovsky, Kyle Wellwood, and Olli Jokinen. To me, that's my opinion.
Is that because those guys haven't been winners?
Well, they haven't been. So, part of it.
You know, is this culture argument maybe just a euphemism for soft?
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
You know,
I think the Jets are pretty soft to play against. I don't think anybody comes in here fearing that they're going to have a tough game.
I think the biggest fear that opponents had when they came in here last year, because certainly the Jets are below 500 at home this year, so yeah. There's no fear at home this year. Last year, I think the fear came from the crowd. And people, you know, you hear mumblings, and we've said it on this show, you know, the crowd's a little quiet. The crowd, when they see things worth cheering about, will be as loud as ever. You saw it yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But all they want is a solid effort. All they want is you to go out there and give it your all, and they'll reward you. And, I mean, you saw it. They got a standing ovation yesterday for simply having a good couple shifts.
Yep, sustained pressure.
Sustained pressure.
You're right, Drew. I mean, there's certain guys on the team that are always going to hit. Kane is up there. Permistrov is up there. Slater, Thorburn, Stewart, all these guys. There are other guys on the team you know are not physical guys. Kyle Wellwood will tell you himself, he doesn't hit. That's just not his game. And there are other guys on the team that don't hit. Ponikarovsky, I don't think, was using his body, and that might have been one of the reasons why he was let go and traded. But you know, there.
But did you bring in Alexei Ponikarovsky thinking he was going to use his body?
Ponikarovsky can be a physical guy. He's obviously, you know, you want to get some offense from him. But yeah, I mean, the guy's 6'4", and he'll use his body check. I thought he was extremely unenergetic. But no, that's not the main reason why they brought him in, Drew. But sure, you want a guy, if he's not scoring, you want him to be doing other things, definitely. If he's not scoring, what else is he doing? Is he just skating around? He's not a defensive player.
Too many flybys on this squad. If you want to have a nice project, go up, take a little piece of paper or your computer and count how many flybys the Jets have. And by flybys, I mean chances to hit on the forecheck or chances to finish your check on different portions of the ice, and you just turn and you skate or you hardly touch them. A lot of flybys in the squad.
Is there anybody on this team, you know, that an opponent, you know, is there anybody on this team that's annoying to play against?
Like not a Brad really. Marchand?
Just somebody who's...
A pest?
A pest. I mean, and you...
I would say Tanner Glass was last year. I mean, I think there's guys...
It's hard to be that annoying when you're only playing 6 minutes a game or 8 minutes a game like Tanner Glass was. I'm talking about a guy who, you know, we're going to talk to Mike Harrington. Mike, the Buffalo Sabres traded for Steve Ott. Now, did they give up a more talented player in Derek Roy to acquire Steve Ott? Yeah, they did. But why did they get Steve Ott? Because he's annoying. Because he's hard to play against. He bothers other opponents. Is there anybody on the Jets who, you know, and I know Kane uses the body, and I know Bermie uses the body, and that's good, and that's fine. But there's nobody really annoying on this team to play against.
I don't know if annoying needs to be is the need for the squad, Drew. I think just a competitor. A guy who will make you feel playing, you'll feel that you played that team the next day. And I think when the Jets play Boston, they'll be feeling it the next day.
Yeah.
When the Jets play Philly, they fill it the next day. When other teams play the Jets, to me, they don't fill it the next day.
No, that's, you can. It, you know, it's sort of going to be a soft game where you don't have to stress yourself too very too hard there. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to try and get Jack Edwards on the line to talk about the Bruins-Jets game tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack Edwards, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Jack, how are you?
Good to be with you. Just hopped in a cab on the way into town here. We just landed because we had some mechanical in Buffalo, but we're here.
Well, that's the important part. Glad that the mechanical turned out to be nothing to worry about, of course, as well. Now, Jack,
yeah,
the Bruins are, you know,
today, yeah.
the Bruins, you know, through 12 games already, you know, the class of the Northeast Division. I mean, granted, Montreal's right there with them, but I think most people would say Boston's the better of the two teams. You know, 8-2-2 through the first 12 games of the season. 18 points. Yet you look at this lineup, and you look at the, you know, the scores on this lineup, and only David Krejci is really up there at the point a game margin. You know, how has this team been so successful on the ice without really the, you know, the expected contributions offensively from their stars?
Well, you know, as we were saying last night before the third period collapsed, they've been great in the third period, and they've been especially great in the last 10 minutes. But last night, I don't know if they fell in love with their own reflection or something, but Buffalo was clearly the hungrier and the better team in the third period. And a 40-minute, very solid effort, even though they didn't cash in enough of their chances, was way, way, way short of the mark. And if we've only learned one thing from Claude Julien's teams, it's that they aren't going to make that kind of mistake twice. So I would think that we're going to see a concerted 60-minute effort from the Bruins, and especially offensively. You know, you refer to the lack of scoring with the exception of David Krejci, and I get the impression that the forwards are going to be shooting. If they can see any kind of pipe or any kind of opening in the net, they're just going to fire it toward Pavlik and see what they can come up with, get hungry.
Jack, one of the best shooters on the squad is Nathan Horton, and he's come back, obviously, from concussion issues. We haven't had a chance to really see him play. So I'm going to ask you, has he changed his game at all after dealing with the recurring head injuries?
Not a bit. Nathan's been very solid. When he's physically involved, that's when he plays at his best. So when he gets a good, robust body check in on his first or second shift, it usually sets the tone for an opportunistic night. But that whole line keys off Milan Lucic. When Milan Lucic is moving his feet and he's making his physical presence known and he doesn't take penalties that are not necessary, everything opens up because you've got Lucic on one side and there isn't a defenseman in the league who can hear number 17 coming who doesn't look over his shoulder. Then you got Horton on the other side, and Lucic's physical presence kind of encourages Horton to get involved. And if the two of them are hitting, that allows the master manipulator of time and space, who is David Krejci, to do his thing and do it as well as he can. The other thing to notice, though, is that Krejci is shooting the puck a whole lot more than he has in the last few years. And that's because Claude Julien has really been on his centers, Krejci and Bergeron, to shoot more. And if they can do that, that's going to open things up even more.
Jack, the Bruins are second in the Eastern Conference, but if you look at their power play, they're near the bottom. Why are the Bruins struggling so much this year on the power play?
Until the last two games, they just haven't moved. They have not been fluid on the power play. If you look at Tampa Bay's power play, they set up one of their power play units, sets up in a 1-3-1 formation, which the Bruins often do in one of their two power play units. And until about two games ago, it was the alpha and omega of movement. The Bruins were very static, very predictable. They'd hold the puck. The penalty killers would get on them. That would reduce their time and space and their options, and it would blow up, and the opponent would get an easy clear. If you look at the way Tampa Bay ran the 1-3-1, there were so many players making quick darting moves to seams and flipping position with other players and causing overloads, that the only decisions the penalty killers had to make were bad decisions. You know, do I put myself out of position here, or do I chase the puck there, or do I just stand still and leave two men wide open within 6 feet of each other, either of which has a shooting angle? So I don't know if the Bruins studied Tampa Bay or if they just listened to their coaches more, but in the last two games, the Bruins have moved extremely well on the power play, and it's showing signs of life. It's not the greatest thing in the NHL, but it's getting there.
It's funny you mentioned the Tampa Bay power play, of course. On our Wednesday show, we had just spent a segment last week breaking down that power play. So it'll be interesting for our audience to see how the Bruins run the 1-3-1, as you just mentioned, as compared to the Tampa Bay breakdown that we did. And we saw the Tampa Bay power play just destroy the Jets a couple weeks ago in that 8-3 game. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jack Edwards. He's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack, on the flip side to the Bruins' struggling power play is their penalty kill. It's the best in the league, 93.9% success rate so far this year. How much of the team's success so far this season has been tied to that fantastic penalty kill?
A lot of it. And it's not just killing the penalties, it's killing really bad timing penalties. You know, the Bruins have been in a couple of situations where they've had to kill off a 4-on-3 in overtime or a 5-on-3 in the closing minutes of a game. And more often than not, it's been Patrice Bergeron who's been out there eating up as much of the penalty kill as he can. This guy is just a really, really special player. He doesn't have Steve Yzerman's scoring touch, but he has so much in common with Yzerman in his character, his professionalism, the high quality of play, the fact that he almost never has a bad game, and how he will do anything to help his team succeed. And this is just one to sort of stick under your hat and think about as we progress through this season and the first part of next. We're starting to hear a little bit of chatter. I don't know how much of it is really legitimate, but we're still starting to hear a little bit of chatter that because Bergeron and Marchand are paired on their line and that they're also paired as penalty-killing forwards, it might not be a bad idea to put them both on the Canadian Olympic team for Sochi for 2014 because they know each other so well. And, you know, you look at how those two guys did in 2011 against the Vancouver Canucks, who had quite a bit of talent themselves. Might not be the worst idea in the world to take a look at them and see if Marchand could live up to that level of play. I don't know if he can, but, you know, that might not be a bad third or fourth line combination for Team Canada.
Jack, a guy who's going to be of great importance, or he's always of interest to Canadian hockey fans, in Toronto because he could have been a Maple Leaf, and in Winnipeg because the Jets chose Mark Scheifele ahead of him, is Bruins defenseman, rookie defenseman, Dougie Hamilton. How impressive has Dougie Hamilton been on the back end of the Bruins, and has it been a relatively seamless transition to the NHL game?
Amazing. It's been amazing. Nobody expected a 19-year-old kid to play as well as Dougie Hamilton has, and I keep going back to the same thing. After Peter Chiarelli almost sprinted to the podium in 2011 to select him when he was still on the board at number 9, he said, you know, this is a kid who, as a senior in high school, had a 97 average in chemistry and a 97 average in physics.
Wow.
Now, if you take those two things into account, it tells you a couple of things. Number one, he's pretty smart. And number two, he works really hard because neither of those courses are courses that, you know, smarts alone will get you there. You've got to really stay with the work, and you've got to do a lot of it to understand the complex concepts. Now, if he can do that academically while being all-world as a teenager at defense, you got a feeling that he's got his head in the right place. And everything we've seen of him with the Boston Bruins indicates that is absolutely the case, that Dougie Hamilton is going to be on a pretty steep learning curve for a significant period and really going to be one of the star defensemen in the NHL.
Jack, Tuukka Rask, even though he's been the number one goaltender in Boston before, he was clearly given the number one role this year with Tim Thomas deciding not to play and then being put on suspension and then traded. How has he handled being the number one goaltender again in Boston?
He's waited his whole life for this, and Tuukka is a guy that has prepared himself mentally. He's tried to become stronger physically. We really won't know until he's into the playoff grind and to see if he will not have the kind of physical deterioration that he had when he began to fade against the Philadelphia Flyers. Tuukka Rask alone was not the reason that the Bruins blew the 3-0 lead against Philadelphia, but he certainly did not play better as the series went on. And you want your goalie, in fact, you need your goalie to play better in each coming round. There was a telling moment against the New York Rangers in a game in which the Bruins scored the 2 goals with Rask pulled to tie the game, and eventually they lost in a shootout. He slammed his stick on the ice after he let in a really soft goal. Anton Strahlman took one from the hash marks at the wide side of the circle, and it somehow found a way through and wiggled over the line. And Rask smashed his stick onto the ice, and his teammates picked him up. The week before, Rask had absolutely stood on his head and had a great game, especially in the first period against the Montreal Canadiens. I think he had turned away 13 shots in the first period alone, and most of them were high-quality shots. They believe in him. They will work for him. They've rallied behind him already this season, and they think they can take him as far as any goalie can take them.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Jack Edwards. He's the play-by-play voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Jack, as we just mentioned, Tim Thomas. Did that trade even register in Boston, or is it more so out of sight, out of mind?
It was the punctuation mark that everybody had been anticipating, and it's amazing because in Boston sports, you've got Ted Williams and Bobby Orr, who are at the very highest level of being a hero. And then on the next level, you got Tom Brady, Larry Bird, Carl Yastrzemski, Cam Neely. And Thomas wasn't quite to that second level, but he was pretty darn close. And one more Vezina or one more deep cup run, you know, maybe even just making the Stanley Cup final and wouldn't even have to win it again. Mm-hmm. And he was probably going to be on that second level. And in a span of 6 months from January to June of 2012, he did so many things that so many people perceived as being selfish and not team-oriented that he destroyed his own personal equity in the Boston area. He was a guy who never would have had to buy another meal in his life in Boston, and now nobody would even buy him a French fry.
Jack, final question. You look at the Boston Bruins roster, and aside from, you know, Nathan Horton's pending free agency, unrestricted, and Tuukka Rask, we mentioned before, being a pending RFA, the team is really signed for the foreseeable future. Do you see a comfort and security level amongst this squad that they know they'll be together for the long haul, and that allows them to play a certain way?
Stability is part of the plan. Peter Chiarelli was an economics major at Harvard, and it shows in the way he's built his team and the way he's already been able to turn it over. If you look at Rask and Dougie Hamilton, Sagan, you know, there's your next core. And those guys are all, you know, way far away from being at their peak as NHL players. Chara's still in his prime. Bergeron is just in the first third of his prime if he can stay healthy. Marchand is better than people thought he would be. I think there is a comfort without there being a complacency. If you look at the team and the way it is built and the players who have the no-trade and no-movement provisions in their contract, there is a commitment to a core, a commitment to a style of play that is connected between Peter Chiarelli and Claude Julien, and that is certainly part of the success, especially in a lockout-shortened season when you had to throw the teams together, get them on the ice. And the Bruins got off to their best 11-game start in their club's history. So that's, you know, it certainly speaks to the stability that Chiarelli has built in. In terms of looking forward, they got $7 million worth of cap space this year. And if they use Savard's long-term injury reserve, mm-hmm. which they're entitled to, which is worth $4 million, if they go all the way to the cap, they can go another $4 million because of Savard. You know, it's tantalizing to think about the players they could add. They could take a guy like Mark Streit from the Islanders, who's great at running a power play, a guy like Aginla, who's got a big salary, but they could afford it, a guy like Ryan Smith, who has another year to go on his contract, but is the kind of character and quality player that any team wanting to make a cup run would love to have.
I believe we refer to that as a high-class problem. Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy your day in Winnipeg, and we'll see you tomorrow at the arena.
thanks. The Illegal Curve is the best name of any hockey show in North America. It's a joy to be with you every time.
Thanks, Jack. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Richie, did you shoot the sheriff?
But I did not shoot Drumondale.
Thanks. I'm glad. That's a good clarification. You never know what's going to happen during the break. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on illegalcurve.com, on iTunes, and, of course, on the tsn1290.ca website. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. A proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protection. In two short appointments, you can get your own custom-fitted mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. We're actually going to hear from Dr. Les Rikus. He's going to join us in about an hour to discuss the importance of mouth guards as part of your safety equipment when you're playing hockey, football, soccer, really any sport altogether. Gentlemen, we've passed the quarter mark of the NHL season. We're now,
not the quarter pole, though. You pointed out correctly before the show.
Yes, the quarter.
It's not the quarter pole.
No, when you say the quarter pole, which is a horse racing term, quarter pole refers to when there's only a quarter of the race left. So when there's three quarters of the season done, I'll say we are now at the quarter pole. Quarter mark is isn't a horse racing term, is when you finished a quarter of the season.
Yeah, and it's fitting that you point that out because you're a thoroughbred.
Yes, thank you, Ezzy. I do appreciate that. It's a little bit creepy, but whatever. Anyways, the Winnipeg Jets through a quarter of the season are 5-7-1, 13 games. They have a grand total of 11 points. That puts them in a tie for last in the Eastern Conference, but at the same time, that also only puts them 4 points out of the eighth playoff spot. Wanted to take this opportunity to sort of go through the team and give out some report cards of players. We'll do that over the next couple segments, or this segment, then we have Mike Harrington in the Buffalo News, and then we'll pick it back up at the quarter to the top of the hour mark. Looking at the Jets forwards, let's start with the forwards. What is the highest grade you can give to a Jets forward, and who is that forward that deserves the highest grade? Richie, I'll start with you, and then we'll move to Ezzy. Who's been the Jets' best forward, and what is the highest grade what is the grade that player gets?
I think you can give Andrew Ladd an A for his play thus far. I think he's 12 points in 13 games, 7 goals. That's pretty 7 goals in 13 games, guys. I think Brian Little's impressed me probably the most, but my expectations of Brian Little are less than they are of Andrew Ladd. So I think Andrew Ladd has been the top forward on the squad, and I'd give him an A.
I'd give Andrew Ladd an A. I'd give Brian Little an A. I'd give Alexander Burmistrov an A.
Even though he hasn't done anything on the score sheet.
Alexander Burmistrov doesn't, if you look at his production, doesn't have a lot of points.
Yeah. He's got a goal and an assist. He's got 2 points.
He's only got two
games.
Points, but Alexander Burmistrov, and I told this to Richie last night up in the press box. Alexander Burmistrov, he's a great skater. He can throw a body check. He's up there on the leading the team in hits. But his defensive awareness and his ability to back check and lift guys' stick, he does not always things that everyone's looking at, but he hustles. He's doing the little things, and he's still trying to find his role in the team. I think he's best suited as a kind of a third line defensive guy that can chip in some offense. He's got better in faceoffs, but I think considering his age and considering that he didn't have the best start last year, and I really like his game. I think Burmy is the type of guy that you want to keep in Winnipeg. He busts his
behind,
and I think he's really impressed me. And I I'm saying that, yeah, sure, you'd like him to have 4 or 5 more points, absolutely. But I think he has been a very consistent player, game in and game out.
Brian Little-Drew also to me gets a grade A. I think he has less points than Blake Wheeler, but I really liked his game this year.
Yep.
skating really well. You know, he's played both center and wing.
Had a beautiful pass to Ladd last night.
Yeah, he's played both center and wing. I don't know if that was intentional, though, Izzy. But
yeah, it was a shot at him. It's true.
He's played both center and wing.
He got the assist. That's what matters.
The versatility is important there as well. And I think, especially on a team that's, you know, doesn't really have a ton of depth in either position. So, but overall, Drew, if we're going to get to overall grades for the forwards.
Sure. Overall, and then we can always break it down with some more players individually.
Overall, you're really topping out at best at a C+. I mean, look at the production. I mean, as he mentions, Burmistrov and his progression defensively. I thought he was pretty good defensively last year, but your point's well taken in terms of his responsibility at both ends of the ice, Ezzy. But when you look at Olli Jokinen, 4 points, and you look at Vander Kane with 3 goals, and you look at, you know, Nick Antropov with 3 points, you look at, I mean, even Jim Slater with 2 points. A bunch of these guys have 2, 3, 4 points in 13 games, guys. I mean, and Wheeler's has 11 points in 13 games, but he hasn't been that great. Overall, I can't see how you can give this squad as a group, the forwards as a group, anything above a C+. It's been a, I mean, we said it earlier in the first hour of the show. They haven't scored more than 3 goals in 8 games.
I would probably give the forwards a C+ as well. And, you know, I want to see a consistent effort out of this team. I want to see a 60-minute effort. And I thought that they gave it last night. You know, I was talking to you, Drew, at the game last night, and we said, even though they lost, that might have been their best effort. And he could make a strong argument. There wasn't a letdown. They didn't take, except for at the end when they took the 5-on-3, they had a 5-on-3 with the first penalty of Redmond was suspect. I think that if they do that, and again, they need to, you're right, Richie, they need to put the puck in the net. There are too many guys that aren't scoring on a nightly basis, but if you give me the effort, I'll take that as a start.
That was an awful penalty call, and I mean, that was just a terrible penalty call by the refs on Redmond. But aside from that, the fact that we've given so much attention to them playing hard last night.
Well, isn't that a sign that the team is a dud?
Exactly. That's a sign that the team hasn't played hard, because if you play hard all the time, you don't need to note that all the time. You just expect it. We don't expect, as observers, them to play hard all the time. If we take note this significantly of a performance in which they lost 3-1.
You're right. If we're celebrating a loss by a 3-1 margin and we're so happy and we're so accepting of the loss because the effort was there, that should tell you that for the first month of the season, you know, give or take, that effort has not been there on most nights rather than not. And that's a big problem, and that's something that the Jets still do need to fix. And we'll see tomorrow, can they match that effort again? Because if they take a step back, it's going to be another ugly defeat. Because obviously when you're playing top-flight talent, if you don't give your best effort, and even your best effort might not be enough sometimes, it's not going to end well. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Harrington from the Buffalo News is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.